Hi, I'm Danica Johnson.
And I'm Chris LeConte.
And we're Champion Chat 360.
As a graduate student, I should be having a little bit of the symptoms that are consistent with obsessive compulsive personality disorder or anxiety disorder. I should be anxious. I should be obsessing over getting shit done and feeling anxious if I don't get it done. So where this gets tricky is, when do we know that it's just situational, or when do we know that it's something that kind of needs that diagnosis and requires a little bit more than just taking a step back? So when did you feel that yours needed a little bit more, that it wasn't just situational, that this, if it wasn't taken care of now, that it was going to be continuing on?
When I had the panic attacks, I think they were just that scary because the tightness of the chest and that stuff. I mean, I wasn't sleeping. I wasn't, you know, it was just a lot of everything, like you said.
Yeah, is when it becomes really scary. So another part to this is just by talking with somebody and then take a step back and kind of look at, is it because of the situation that I'm in, or is it happening just randomly? Mm-hmm. Like, is it happening randomly, and what are my triggers? Are my triggers something that I can cope through, or is this so debilitating that I need something to help me with this? And I ended up I was prescribed Ativan, which is only for situational things. So when my anxiety heightened, it was actually in snow. Oh, and no. I have horrible anxiety driving in snow. And it's debilitating. Like, I can't focus. I lose my shit. Like, I just can't do it. There's no coping skill that I can tap myself into and be like, I got this. So that's where I needed it. Others find that it's not so situational, that it's not like one event that will happen, that it can be all day long that it's happening, that so many things are triggers. Mm-hmm. So they kind of need to kind of reset that chemical imbalance that might be skills that maybe they don't need to be on that medication, but some need to be on it for the rest of their life. So it raises like a few different like topics we could go into, but I was talking to my mom about it. My siblings and I think that we're wired kind of differently, and anxiety and depression and addictive personality disorder kind of run in the family. Mm-hmm. And it has all manifested in different ways in our lives. Mm-hmm. And we have all tried different coping skills in different ways in our life. So, and all of them I think are okay because everybody has whatever works for them. So mine is exercise and talking. Sometimes my brother may have smoked a little bit of weed. That may have helped a little bit. But I don't recommend that.
Unless it's legal. Legal in your state, whatever.
And you're prescribed it, then right. Fine. If you have marijuana, mm-hmm. then cool. But another part to this is obsessive compulsive disorder. So, which, God, we could go on a tangent with that, but my mom and I are saying how, like, depression, anxiety, and obsessive compulsive disorder kind of all, like, hold each other's hands, mm-hmm. I guess you mm-hmm. could say,
yeah.
And they all play a role with each other, and they can make your thoughts become something that is disturbing to you. So with anxiety, I think the worrying happens, and then when the thought becomes something that, like, you can't control the direction of the thought or the intensity of the thought, then that, or it's always happening all the time, then that could be something that kind of goes along with OCD. And I don't know if you've ever experienced, like, any obsessive compulsive behaviors or thoughts at all with your anxiety?
I'm a very creature of habit. I don't know if I would say I'm obsessive compulsive. Well, I guess the only thing I guess I'm obsessive compulsive about, mm-hmm. and this is like a fear thing too, and we can laugh about this because I laugh about it all the time, is windows at night. So that fear at night. So I won't be able to sleep because I'm scared for no reason that someone's gonna break into the house, and like then I'm like, well, what am I gonna do? And all that stuff. So kind of like I've broken through what my mind does when I just have to pack. My mind does the same thing about like at night fears, or a same thing at night where I just kind of think of all of my to-do lists the next day. So it's not really, it's just a lot of brain going. Nothing like, it might be, I don't know, I might be talking myself out of it, but it's not like what you think of it, or what I'm thinking of obsessive compulsive is like checking something all the time,
Yeah,
or
so that raises like a good question. So I think a lot of people think of it as like a habitual thing, or like I can only step on the carpet with my right foot, or I have to tap the doorknob 3 times before I open it, like something like that. But thoughts are a big part of it too. So my mom and I just were chit-chatting about like thoughts that become kind of gross. So it could be like sexual thoughts, or thoughts about death, or like just thoughts that like you don't know why you're thinking them or why they're in your head, and then you get frustrated because they're in your head, but then they don't get out of your head. That is part of obsessive compulsive disorder. So,
Then I absolutely have that at night.
yeah, you have death, like thoughts of death.
Oh yeah. Like so fearful of, yeah, I would say so. Yes.
Yeah, so I have thoughts of death too, but they're in a very like messed up way. And I was trying to tell my mom the very first time I had this, and it's thoughts of harm and thoughts of death. Thoughts of like, if I did this, then this would happen. And but why would I ever think about doing that? And then I get like mad at myself that I'm thinking about it, and because it's weird. The first time I ever thought about this was, I don't know if you remember like the handheld Nintendo games. They're like handheld, and you could like bring them with you. And I think I had like Little Mermaid or something, and we were crossing over this bridge, and I was probably like 10 years old, and I remember it like it was yesterday. But we were crossing over this huge bridge, and I had my handheld game, and I was walking with my mom, and I kept on thinking, I'm gonna throw this thing over it, and what would happen if I throw it over? And if I throw it over, then this is gonna just like explode. And then what would happen if I just jumped over? But that would be horrible. But I'm definitely gonna drop this thing. But I'm not gonna drop this thing because I know that that's bad. Like, and I kept on staying fixated on it, and it wouldn't leave my mind. And it was horrible. Like, I remember being like, oh my God, why can't I just stop thinking about this? And my mom said, I was telling her about this, and she said like she has had very similar like thought patterns or thoughts that have just like nonstop gone on. Like, what would happen if I dropped these scissors and these scissors accidentally like bounced up and then hit Hope in the face, and then Hope got a cut, and then but then the cut wouldn't stop bleeding because I didn't do anything with it, and I looked at it, but I wasn't doing anything. Like, it just keeps on going, and the behavior is not going to happen. Like, where it becomes a problem is when you act upon these thoughts, which are really messed up. But that is part of obsessive compulsive disorder, and I don't think a lot of people know that. Or sexual thoughts, like I say gross and like not a ew, like but gross. I don't know of another word, alternative, I guess, or grotesque, or but it is a thought that is conflicting with your typical behavior, and then it challenges like you to be like, oh, why would I think that? Like, why is that a thought that's going through my head? And I know some people that do experience that, and then they feel bad about the thought that they're having, and but they continue to have it, like they can't let it go out of their head. How frustrating is that, right? So then I would understand why, number one, people wouldn't talk about it because it's weird, right? Like, I mean, it probably happens more often than not, but it's weird. And so they're embarrassed and ashamed, and they don't talk about it. And but it happens, and it's exhausting because it doesn't leave. It like stays in there. And you can't like pick it out and say, hey, you don't belong in my mind right now. So different ways to cope with it, right? So what are some like other ways that you have kind of coped with thoughts or behaviors that you're like, meh, this isn't really like consistent with how I want to be right now? How have you kind of managed that?
The bad way was drinking. I would drink until I was
Okay.
numb because I didn't want to feel or think anything. The good way, the much better, healthier ways have been like a meditation. So even like today, for instance, I had a bad morning, like night, whatever. So I sat in the sun, even though it's freezing out, I sat with the sun on me and just like sat, and I couldn't stop moving because Belle didn't want to stop moving, but I sat on a ball and just put everything away and just sat there. And she was quiet, so it was nice. So, breathing, basically, taking its chance to breathe. I journal a lot. I write down things, so I feel like if I can write them down, I can get them out of my head. Even
Right.
if you write it down in your own code way, because you don't want to ever be judged. I don't know if you ever did that when you were a kid about like, I liked X B, whatever initials you want to use. And stuff, but I journal a lot. I think those are a couple of the ways that I do. I mean, obviously walk or run. If I'm really stressed or really kind of have a lot going on, I'll try to sleep if I can. Sometimes I'll sleep too, if I can.
Yeah. So the little bean had to wake up, so she's joining our little discussion.
That's okay. Mine woke up too. She's just laying in her crib though. I'm watching her.
So I think there's so many different ways to cope with it. One way that I try to help people through it is to figure out what are you doing, like what are you doing in your life currently, and what do you have control over in your life? So what do you have control over? What do you not have control over? And like exploring things a little bit more. Because I think our initial reaction to anxiety or even like negative thoughts or scary thoughts that we're like, what the fuck just happened? Earmuffs, earmuffs. Our initial reaction is to be like, to run or to have an immediate response instead of like exploring it, right? It's either we shove it into like a bag and like hope that it goes away or we run away from it. I try to really have people explore where are these thoughts coming from? What would happen if you act upon that thought? What would cause you to act upon that thought in your life? What do you have control over? What do you not have control over? Do you feel that these thoughts or these behaviors and feelings are so overwhelming in your life that you just need some help with it, and it's causing you so much stress in your life and causing you not to be able to like be a good mom, be a good sister, daughter, or a partner. And are you finding that it's causing difficulty for you to perform well in your occupation? Then I think it's time to kind of be able to reassess and see maybe there is a chemical imbalance. And I'm a strong believer in that. But I also think that sometimes exploration should happen first. My mom doesn't agree with me when it comes to this, but that's okay because she has her own experience with things. But I always say, let's break, take a step back, explore. And then if the exploration isn't working out, then we can look at other ways. I don't know why I go towards the exploration thing and not towards the let's just go to medication. My mom is very much a there's a chemical imbalance, let's do the medication. Maybe it's because holistic approaches are more prevalent nowadays than they were in the past.
Yeah, I think also though what you kind of said, Danica, before is that you like to talk, so you'll talk it out even in your own self, even if you're like you went through the steps like I joked about my squirrel. Like you say, what if this and then this, or what if this didn't happen or this happened. Some people can't not lie to themselves. Or like something I talk to my clients a lot about in just their workout worlds, which could be part of this, is I make them say it out loud. So I make them say the reason why they're not doing something or are doing something out loud, because you're saying it in your head all the time, but you're always putting it back. Like you said, you're pushing it down into that luggage because you don't either A, you don't want to deal with it, because if you have to deal with it, you have to do something. If you do something, you change something. And change is hard for a
Right.
lot of people. Or they just don't believe themselves that it's true. Like, they're just so in denial with it, even though they know it and they say it to themselves. I mean, it can just be like little things. It can be this anxiety things, or it could be just something that you don't want to do. Like, just doing the dishes and how much it wears on you. Like, ugh. There's Brian Tracy. He talks about eating that frog. So, taking this down a little bit, where it could be any little task where those things, that task that you keep putting off, drains your emotion, drains your emotion. Well, some people don't realize that frog is maybe an internal thing that they have to deal with instead of like the dishes. But when they do deal with it, they're able to really move forward in their life. And some people just can't do that. That's why some people, I think, have to do medication, because then maybe they can help. But I think therapy is the next step, where it goes back to what you were saying before, talking it through. So maybe getting them to a neutral ground, so they're not so level 10 on anxiety or OCD. Bring them down to like more like 4 or 5 if they can, and then talk it through so that they can slowly get off of it or get through it. The other thing, so often we don't know what normal is. Like, we think we only know our normal, and we don't know that that's not normal, or it is normal. Having to talk to everyone about what Braxton Hicks feels like, or what labor feels like. It's like, no, this is a normal feeling. Oh, wait, that's supposed to happen? Or how you feel if you eat shitty food all the time, and you're just like, oh, that's just normal. That's how I'm just a normal person that feels like that. That's just me. And then you have them eat healthy for a little bit, and they're like, oh, wait, it wasn't normal to feel like that? I don't get it. I think a lot of people just don't know that that's not what's supposed to happen. And I hate saying normal, but.
Yeah, and then like what is normal? Because everyone's normal is different, right? And that is frustrating too. I think sometimes from like a, I know in my mind I'm very much, I can be a perfectionist. So sometimes when people feel okay with a certain thing, like they're okay in their life with a certain thing, and it doesn't cause them any distress, or they're doing really good in their job and they have a great like relationship and they're a great parent, and but to me that's not normal. Like, a behavior that they're doing isn't normal. And I'm like, but wait, that's wrong. But it's not. Like, that's their normal and that's okay. And I think where like there's like that gray area that we kind of tread in, but I think when like it brings harm to yourself or harm to others, or you're not doing well in those areas of your life, is where it's not normal. Or like internally, when you're causing harm, that's when it's not normal, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yes, it makes 100% sense. And I think back when I did go on medication, it was before I went on my self-help journey or self-realization. And it kind of lines up where I stopped taking the medication when I started to look inward more. Like, I came from a family that no one talked about any of that kind of stuff. We talked about everything else except for like, and maybe it's an education, like a lot, there wasn't the education around it, but we didn't talk about negative or worried. And I didn't know my dad was on anti-anxiety medication, antidepressant medication, until I told him I was on it for a little while. He's like, yeah, I've been on it for years. I was like, what? Like, wait a minute. And not because he was embarrassed. He just didn't think like it was something that I needed to talk about, or like, he needed to talk about, or whatever. It was a really interesting thing, and it's an interesting, like, if you don't have people in who are in your life that are like, let's talk about that, or how does that make you feel? Because even with Mike in relationship stuff, like, we are really good communicators. I joke because we're both Geminis, but we can communicate bad in negative ways, or we can communicate efficiently. There was one point where we were not communicating efficiently, and I was like, nope, we're not going to do it like this. And we stopped ourselves and thought about what we were going to say and said it more efficiently. So I think the talking really can help in one way or another. Therapy. Some people are worried about it or have a negative idea of it or anything, but do you want to give your side of it, and then I can kind of tell you what I've experienced with it?
Yeah, I've been to probably five different therapists, I think, growing up. And I was very quick to say, nope, not going to work for me. Nope, not going to work for me. I think that therapy can be a beautiful thing when you find somebody that you feel like, she agrees, everybody. When you find somebody that you can connect with and that you feel comfortable with, that you can open up with, I think that it helps you to explore things that you may not have thought of. And it also helps you to answer your own questions, if that makes sense. So a lot of, like, so I found one, and it just happened to be the same exact psychologist that my mom ended up seeing. So he already knew, like, the family history. And the reason why I connected so well to him is that he didn't give me the answers. He made me explore a lot of things, and by the end of like each session, I would be answering my own questions because he would keep everything open-ended. And he also would ask a lot of, and then what? Oh, okay. Well, what if that happened? Oh, okay. So then what would happen if you did this? And I liked that because he didn't give me answers. And I think that therapy is for exploration of yourself and for why you're in whatever moment that you're in or whatever event that you're in, whatever situation you're going through. I think it's to be able to explore it, what has brought you to that place in life and how are you going to work through it. And how are you going to develop some coping skills? And what people should know, maybe not, because it's like a trick, is a lot of it you already know. It's just being able to have somebody help you to find all those things.
Yeah, I agree. And that's the same reason in our field, like Jason Sello was saying, the more you can get your clients to talk to you about stuff or to like really connect with them on a almost like a psychology level, that's where you're gonna have more success with your clients because you're gonna find out what I always say and joke around with my clients is why. The only thing I say to them is why. Like half the time they'll get why. Why? And it's a funny thing they make jokes out of, they get a little annoyed about it, but it's really just to walk them through their path because like I said before, I'm trying to get them to say why they're doing something, why they're not doing something. And with anxiety, it could be the same thing, right? Like why am I always thinking this, or why am I always doing this, or why am I not doing this? Why am I fearful of this? Yeah, I think it's good. The time that I went was pretty much just me, same thing, just talking. I don't even think the lady said a word. I think she said hello and goodbye. But I do. I think it's really important to, if you don't feel like you can get through it, or you're being truthful with yourself, then get someone to talk to. If they can't find someone to talk to, they don't find, maybe they don't have an area or they don't have the financial means to do it. Do you have any other like books or things that you've liked that you've heard of that have helped you?
Yeah, I worked in a residential home for adolescent girls, and that was probably one of the toughest. I mean, it's adolescent girls, number one. Number two, they all were diagnosed with something, whether it was an accurate diagnosis or not, but a lot of them came from like very broken homes or very bad, unstable backgrounds. And some of them just didn't want to talk. So I would give them a workbook. There are so many workbooks that are out there and that help you to explore things and ask you some questions. And it doesn't have to be like, I think that they're very interactive and it's like a journal, but it's like a guided journal to help you through things. There's anxiety workbooks, there's depression workbooks, there's eating disorder workbooks, which are awesome. Yeah, I find those to be kind of like a therapist, but you get to do it on your own time and you are able to kind of do it with like whatever flow you want to do it in. You don't have somebody looking at you, I guess.
Yeah. When I was
in this whole time frame that was really bad for me was I had a couple books that were recommended to me from clients, and I've talked about this book many times, was The Four Agreements. And I think what The Four
Yeah.
Agreements helped me to do was to realize, oh shit, I do X, Y, and Z, which is good or bad. Like the take things personal thing. Like when I read the cover, and I've said this before, but just that one. So there's four agreements. There's, do your best, never take anything personal, never assume. That's what I think the fourth one is. To not take things personal, being someone who came from the Rocky mentality or like the I'll show you kind of mentality, I took everything personal. When you take things personal, you also do things to try to make people also personally upset. So, like, let's say someone upset you and you're like, well, fine, then I'm not gonna do this or I'm gonna do this to make you mad. And I was like, huh, I would do that all the time. Or you would fight with a significant other and you're like, he or she said this and I'm gonna say this. And that was our calling card at my house when I was a kid. Someone did something mean to you, well, you said something mean back. Like, it wasn't like, yeah, it wasn't like you definitely. Our tongues were very sharp, for bad, bad, very bad. Reading that book really helped me to actually just like stop and be like, holy shit, I do that. That's not fun. I don't like that feeling when it happens to me. Let's stop that
Right.
shit, or at least start trying to stop it or realize it. Because sometimes you're not going to always stop it. And I think that's another key thing too with this whole thing is that you're not going to be cured, quote
Right.
unquote, overnight. Or maybe ever.
It's just figuring out how you can. I think that I said to my mom, and Matt has said this to me a lot too, with when I was struggling with an eating disorder, there was a point in time that I was like, I'm done with this. I have this issue with control. How can I make this a part, because it wasn't going away. But maybe like the eating disorder aspect of it was, but the control piece wasn't. And then I thought, how can I, if this is going to be a part of my life and it's not necessarily going to go away, it's a piece of me, how can I make it a healthy piece of me? Like, how can I make it work with my life so that it's not so debilitating, so that it's not such a negative thing? How am I able to flip it around and use it?
That's a great example. Any other tips you have for people? Like, if this kind of sounds like me, now what do I do?
Don't WebMD. That's my first tip. Don't do that. You'll like go down in a rabbit hole and you're just gonna frazzle yourself. So don't do that. If you really feel that something is going on and it's really affecting your everyday life, then I would absolutely seek out a health professional, and that could be your primary care physician. Then they can refer you to somebody, or you can, talk to somebody that may be in the field, maybe a friend, and they can help you, or somebody that's gone through it, and then kind of go from there. So don't be afraid to talk to somebody. I think that is a big thing to say. It's more common than not that people are going through these things. Better out than in, right? If it's causing you so much stress in your life and you know that it's not beneficial, better out than in. Another thing too, I do think that books are good. So I think workbooks are good, journaling is good. It's also a good tool to use maybe when you go to a doctor and say, so these are some things that like I've written down to kind of help you compile everything that you're feeling and thinking about. Then it helps, say you do go see a therapist, it helps the therapist a lot too to kind of know what's the groundwork that you've been doing for this. This is really hard, but it's easier said than done. Don't be embarrassed. Don't be ashamed. Don't be embarrassed. Everybody goes through struggles and challenges, and know that you're not alone at all, whether a female, male. Dogs have it. Dogs are put on antidepressants. You're not alone at all. So don't feel that you are. And that's why there are professionals out there to help you to manage this. And it doesn't mean that you're weak. It just means that it's a part of you. It means that you're unique in your own little way. And You share something with other people. That's all. And in this whole podcast, I just want you to know she has thrown up all over me.
And she's okay.
She's great now.
Yeah. Mine gave me more of my trouble earlier today. I'm taking a mommy timeout and I'm tagging a man in.
Good.
So.
Good.
Sometimes that has to happen. What's something you're thankful for today?
You know what? I'm thankful for my education.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm not able to use it, or I feel like I'm not able to use it sometimes, or sometimes I'm like, oh shit, why did I get my master's? God, I'm still paying so much for this stupid master's degree. But you know what? I use it more often than I don't. And I'm very thankful for that. What are you thankful for?
Tagging a man in, like I just said. And this was actually really great and helpful and useful. And it's a good reminder. Just good to always, you know, check in with yourself. And it's okay, like
yeah.
you said, to not be okay, I guess, maybe. But then the next part of that is
Absolutely.
Give yourself a chance to move forward. There is a way forward. And I think a lot of people, they're either, like I said, scared of moving forward, or they just don't know how. But there is a way. And I just want everyone to know that there's always an option
right.
to get out or to change things. Excellent. So
right.
if you have questions more about this, you can absolutely. Danica is a whiz at this. Like she said, she did get her master's. So if you have any just little things like, hey, da-da-da-da-da, the doctor's in.
That's right.
All right. So if you want to email us, it's championchat360@gmail.com. And if you want to email us individually, we'll put those in the links below. So we will be talking to you next week. Hopefully we have a guest. If not, we'll have some of the questions that have been coming in about 360 life, so workout, food, family kind of ideas, all that stuff. Until next, talk to you later. Bye.